Hi, everyone. Welcome to the Duluth Rundown, a podcast focused on the local Twin Ports running scene. My name is Tony Stensland with Tony Stensland Coaching.
And I am Mike Ward with Duluth Timing and Events.
All right, quick thank you before we get started to our sponsor of this episode, Austin Jaro, Duluth's original running store. That's the place to get your running shoes. Great advice from all the people that work up there. Check out their website, austin-jaro.com. They are also on Facebook and Instagram. Drive on up to their location on Central Entrance, just on the other side of where the Home Depot is, but on the other side of the road. Or give them a call, 218-722-1185. Thanks so much to Austin Jaro. All right, everyone, we are back for another episode, episode number 43 of the Duluth Rundown podcast. Big thanks to everybody who's continues to listen. We're trying to record maybe now once a month instead of once every 3 weeks. We got a suggestion. We should record less, which says something about maybe our quality of our programming. No, I'm kidding. Actually, it's a pretty good idea to maybe just do like a one monthly recap. I think that works out pretty well for us, and hopefully it works out well for the listeners as well. Mike, what's new? How you been?
Been well.
Yeah. Good.
I'm excited to talk about our November podcast here. And I like the monthly kind of the deal too. It kind of makes more sense just to recap the whole month of October and look forward to the whole month of November and
exactly,
so on and so on.
I think it does. You and I would talk a lot of times about how quickly the 3 weeks would go by sometimes. I
mean,
you do a podcast and then you think, wow, okay, we've got some time now. I can try to line up an interview, write down some topics to talk about. Next thing you know, it's like it's 2 days away and we have to record another podcast. So this gives us an extra week too to kind of prep.
Right.
Quote prep, not like we do a lot of prep, but just to kind of mentally be ready for this kind of a thing.
Right.
We are recording again outside, which is pretty nice. It's November 6th, Saturday morning, and we've got a beautiful sunny sky out here. Pretty nice to be able to
unseasonably warm day.
To be
I would
able to
say
do this. You never wouldn't have thought. Who knows? Maybe December we can be outside again too.
I feel like last year at this time there was like inches and inches of snow on the ground.
Right. Yeah.
Didn't it snow right in early? Maybe I'm thinking the end of November.
I think it snowed in the end of November. Yeah. Maybe either gobble gallop or post gobble gallop.
Right.
Kind of thing. I can't. I know early December had it for sure.
Any day now though, it could dump.
Yeah, it's been feeling like it. Other than this weekend, as we're heading in, like I say, it's November 6th, and this is supposed to be a pretty nice weekend. But the last few days prior, even there were some snow flurries kind of falling from the sky.
So.
You can kind of feel that weather as you're out running right now.
Right. Well, should we get to the podcast? Okay, let's talk about recent races with the Whistle Stop Marathon, which was on October 9th, 2021. You were a participant, Tony. Do you want to talk about how the day was?
Yeah, I ran the marathon. A lot of folks here, you know, have gone over for Whistle Stop for whatever reason. The half is always really popular, even just to cheer people on. You know, I know a lot of Duluth people head over for that. Great race. Love the post-race festivities. This year they weren't able to have the you know, the big tent and the music and the food and everything, which was a bummer because that's a nice aspect, but the race still was amazing. And one of the unique things this year about Whistle Stop was the weather was incredibly warm. Actually a little too warm and far too humid for marathon purposes, even half marathon purposes. But post-race, I've been over there, I don't know, at least 10 different years in whatever capacity, and post-race usually you're freezing, you're in your down winter puffer stocking hat. This year I stayed in my running shorts and had a t-shirt on and was absolutely fine. I've never been at such a warm Whistle Stop, which was kind of nice post-race, but it wasn't so good to run in. Really good turnout over there though, and still a lot of fun. The marathon went pretty well for me. Didn't quite hit my goal time, but I'm not too upset about that. I ran as well as I could, and I'm pleased with that. It's my first marathon in 8 years.
I
was a little nervous about how it was going to go.
Yeah.
You know, knowing that, oh, these are really hard and they hurt.
Yeah.
But not knowing, you know, I haven't done this for so long. How am I going to deal with that hurt late in the race? So,
yeah.
Yeah, overall, it went pretty well.
What were your expectations? Were they met, exceeded, or under regarding the pain?
You know, I would say that met and exceeded. It was, as I recall, the difficult, yeah. You know, the last few miles.
Yeah.
But I was worried about how I would perform when that pain came and when, you know, and so I think I exceeded that, even though, again, my time wasn't, I thought, well, I should have been able to run a little quicker. I didn't, and that's okay. But I was pleased with how I did handle the that difficulty at the end.
Yeah.
So, yeah. So I walked away quite happy and full of confidence for the next one, for sure. And I can't wait.
Cool.
In fact, I was, for a couple of weeks prior, I was like, oh, I should find one down south and go run like Houston or Phoenix or something. But so that's a good sign that I was sort of that excited. I'm not going to do either one of those, but, you know, I was
thinking about Grandma's?
Yeah, I'll probably run Grandma's full.
No way.
Plan. Yeah. Yep. I've already signed up for Madeline Island Half in May.
Yeah. Okay.
And that'll be a tester for Grandma's, and I'll probably run Grandma's full. I have some plans for that.
So. I mean, without knowing the numbers on the back of my hand here, I would say, going out on a limb, with decades of doing training groups leading up to Grandma's, I mean, have you ever run that race?
I've ran Grandma's twice, actually.
Oh.
Once before I did any training group stuff, and once while I was doing the training group.
Okay.
Yeah, I think my first year of doing the training group, actually, 2010. So that was the last time I ran Grandma's full, or any Grandma's race for that matter, I believe. Maybe I did the half once in between there, but 2010 was the last Grandma's full for sure.
Cool.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to that. Yeah.
Yeah, great. Well, we do have results from the Whistle Stop Marathon. First place overall, Jacob Wortman here from Duluth with a 2:41.30. And then first place female was Emma Cameron from Madison, Wisconsin with a 3:10.15. And then, there was a top three women right in a row, so that looks like a really tight race. Let's just zip through just top in each race, because there's a lot here. Thomas Cedarquist from Duluth won the half marathon with a smoking fast time, 1:11.15. And then on the ladies' side, Jane Rotunda with a 1:24.45, also from Madison, Wisconsin. Took that race. Let's see, in the 10K. Now, this is not quite as competitive, but the 10K was won by Mathia Brink, and also first place in the women's division, of course, but overall winner. Nice work, Mathia, from Bemidji, 46:04. And then Daniel Duff from Duluth. Nice work, Dan. First place men for the 10K with a 46:12. Now, Cruising Corridor 5K was won by another local, David Hypenin, who's been on our podcast before, with an 18:03. Nice work, Dave. And then the women's race for the 5K was won by Trisha Steen from Hopkins with a 21:55. So definitely a good showing in the top standings from Duluthians.
Yeah, and I know Dave on the 5K coming into towards the finish, he slipped and fell on a leaf or something.
Oh no!
And went down pretty hard because he was moving pretty quick.
Yeah.
So I talked to him post race after I finished my race, and he was scratched up pretty good.
Really?
Yeah, I felt bad for him, but he still obviously performed pretty well.
I mean, injuries plus that kind of messes up your mindset, coming into the finish, but also your momentum.
Yeah.
Ouch!
Yeah.
On a 5K to go down.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. So. He bounced back well and actually has done a couple of races since and performed well in those. So he's fine now.
Good.
But yeah, felt bad for him.
Yeah, you hate to see that. Next, we have the Wild Duluth races, which were the next weekend, October 16th. The 50-kilometer, which is always pretty competitive, was won by Thomas Lerdahl, 24 from Minneapolis, with a 4:29.42, definitely a good time on the course, and he won the race by about 25 minutes, so a big lead for Thomas, nice work. On the ladies race, La Crescent, Minnesota resident Janelle Lance one in a 5:43.09. And then on the other Saturday race, first place, Mike Ward, me. I don't know how to announce that. 11:25.48. And then third place overall and first on the women's standings is Gretchen Metza with an 11:53.51, which was, I believe, a course record.
Oh, nice.
And Gretchen has just had an insane season. She's out of Buell, Minnesota, up on the range.
Yeah, yeah.
Iron Range. And I think she's done top three overall at several high-profile ultras.
Yeah.
I think Superior 50-mile fall, she was second. I believe she was second at Voyager, second overall at Voyager, which is insane. That might be the best overall standing for a female ever, perhaps.
It'd be interesting to know.
I don't know. Yeah. We have to do more research. Sorry, people. And, yeah, third place overall at Wild Duluth 100K is no joke. So, furthermore, 11:53 is no joke. So, Gretchen, nice work. And then on the Sunday races, of course, there is the Harder Than Heck Half Marathon, which was won by Nathan Swenson out of Afton, Minnesota, with a 1:48.33. Pretty sizable lead for Nathan. Nice work. And then on the ladies' side, Margaret Ho from La Crosse, Wisconsin, wins it with a 2:11.32, followed shortly behind Christy Nixon out of Duluth, who I believe was the NMTC overall champion. 3 seconds back, that must have been a tight race. Finally, to cap off the Wild Duluth weekend, was the terribly tough 10K. First place was Benat Fromming, 18 years old, from Hutchinson, Minnesota, with a 49:17. And first place on the ladies' side was Kathy Dooley from Minneapolis with a 1:08.49. I recall perfect conditions for that race. That whole weekend, pretty fun.
Yeah, that's what I heard. I had knew a lot of people running that race, and we've had some really good fall weather for running and racing this season, which has been nice.
Yeah, lucked out for sure. Next in the race results, we have the NMTC Fall Race Series, which I did not have the results up here. Where are we? But we do have some recent race results, as well as, let's just do the overall standings.
Yeah, the series standings.
We have too many to announce, but since we last recorded, there was the Woodland Race 5K, Bull Run, Rolling Stone, and then the Capstone Race, Hawk Ridge, on Halloween, 10:31. There's no potluck this year, but the normal award ceremony. And the men's results, overall, Jacob Wortman pulled off the series win with 1,215 points. Definitely helps to win several of these. Place, I think, at least top three in all of them, and get the bonus by completing all the races. So pretty impressive, Jacob. Ethan Anderson also was right up there every single week and hit all the races. So it seemed to be a pretty tight race between Jacob and Ethan, and this year Jacob prevailed. On the ladies' side, Christy Nixon blew it out of the park. She got first place in five, and second place in the other two. So it helps your cause. At NMTC, if you go to every single race and either place first or second place. So nice work, Christy. Super strong running. And then in the non-binary, Sam Fry takes the win with, a couple misses at some of the races, but either a first place or second place for the non-binary category. So nice work, Sam. And you were at the Hawk Ridge
Yeah, race. Was that the last one? The only one that I made, but yeah, I was there. Yeah.
That was one of two that I missed, so I'm pretty bummed about it, but it is what it is. And
yeah.
I think I would have had a cool prize, but I missed it.
Yeah, whatever. Because you were ninth overall, I think.
I guess ninth
in
overall.
The series. That's
yeah,
pretty good.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, and it was a fun race for sure.
And you talked to another competitor?
So, post-race, I had a chat with Dr. Kyle Severson, just kind of about his run. It was a short little chat about his running in Duluth, about how that specific race went for him that day, the NMTC series. And let's play a little bit of that interview right now.
Cool. All right, well, I'm joined here post-NMTC race, last race of the season, joined here with Dr. Kyle Severson, who's ran, I think, most of them. We'll ask him officially here. Kyle, thanks for joining.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me. Actually, this one was my first NMTC of the fall series.
Wow.
So I'm glad I got to.
You usually are doing all of them.
Yeah, I wish I could, yeah. They're so fun. Just get out a little bit too late on the weekdays to make the Wednesday ones, but glad that they have ones on Sunday. And man, it's so fun being out on the trail.
Yeah, super fun atmosphere out here today. Beautiful weather. Good to see so many people. And I've been doing these I've been doing them maybe 15-ish years, but kind of off and on in the last 10. And I'm seeing so many new faces compared. I'm looking at the leaderboards and results and stuff. Like, I don't recognize any of the names anymore. It's kind of cool to see new people kind of coming into these races.
Yeah, it's been super, super competitive. It always has been really competitive, but you know, there's new faces, people moving here and really amping up the running community. It's no shortage of competition to push yourself and people that really love running. That's the best thing about it.
Yeah, I think you bring up a good point about new people moving here to Duluth. I mean, you yourself, you spent a ton of time up here as a youngster, if I remember right, and then moved up here, what, 4 years ago, something like that?
Yeah, yeah. Duluth has always been a place that I've loved, and went to school in the cities and visited a lot up here, and wanted to move to a place that had great trails, a great running community, and Duluth has not disappointed on that for sure. So,
very cool. And that's what the NMTC stuff is all about, really. It's about community and showcasing all the stuff that we have, the outdoor, incredible outdoor stuff that we have out here. So how did your race go today for you, Kyle?
I think it went pretty well. Just starting to get some speed work in. That's the best excuse to come to these, to get some speed work.
Very true.
Hopefully run a fast turkey trot, gobble gallop coming up, so it'll be perfect timing. But still some progress to be had. These 2 o'clock races are always tough to time lunch with. But learn to run with a side ache isn't a bad thing.
Right, exactly, yeah.
But it felt good. Felt good to run that horse trail at the end. You just zoom through along Amity Creek, and it's beautiful. So
yeah, yep, I totally agree. Well, hopefully we'll see you at Gobble Gallop, and of course I know we'll see you plenty of other races down the road and out just training too. So thanks for joining us, Kyle.
Yeah, thanks, Tony.
All right, nice. Thanks for getting that interview with Kyle.
Yeah, hoping to do more kind of that.
It's always fun
on location thing. We've done it before with the last man standing,
yep.
Last runner standing,
yeah.
Races and a couple other things. I know once we were out with Kyle, I think I was out with,
yeah.
Literally on a run with
on
Kyle
a run.
Sather.
Yeah. Yeah.
So we can do more of that kind of stuff too.
Kind of cool
fun.
To transport to that,
mm-hmm.
That time, point in time.
Yeah.
So yeah, we got to do that more. It's fun. Finally, race results. We have the North End Nightmare. Which is the Halloween-themed run in Superior, Wisconsin. Grandma's Marathon puts it on. And that race was won by Scott Bailing with a 15:40. Stellar time, Scott. Duluth runner here. And then on the ladies' side, Rochelle Wirth. She's been on our results shout-outs in the past. 59 years old from Duluth, crushing it with a 20:54.
I know, she is fast.
Yeah, amazing. 424 finishers on the night before Halloween.
Yeah, an evening race. Really cool concept that they have there.
Yeah.
With the North End Nightmare. Hopefully we can see that race grow and grow. It's nice to have an evening race. I wish there was more
yeah.
options. Wish there were more options like that in Duluth. I think it's a it's a cool thing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's not a lot of races that have a haunted house on the course.
Right. Yeah.
Moving on to upcoming races, it's kind of that season where we don't have a very stacked schedule. I think the only race really that's coming up is the Gobble Gallop 5K 1 mile kids race on Thanksgiving morning, and so that falls on Thursday, November 25th this year. There's definitely still sign up available, and that's always a fun event to get involved with if you're in town in Duluth for the Thanksgiving holiday. And I think that kind of wraps up our recent and upcoming races. Do you want to pop into the trails report here, Tony?
Yeah, I'll go quickly on the trails report. Right now, they're pretty nice, but I have a little caveat, and I just experienced this, was it yesterday? We're recording on Saturday? Yeah. No, it was Thursday. It was Thursday, and I was in Hartley a little bit, and one thing I've noticing is that they're getting slippery as the trails will freeze at night. So in the morning they're kind of firm, and then as they sort of re-thaw as the day gets warmer, that little layer of frozen dirt becomes slippery mud pretty quickly.
Mm-hmm.
And I ran actually almost the same route on Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday through Hartley, root canal, guardrail, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. And Thursday, I went later in the day. I went like around noon, and it was slippery. I was just wearing road shoes because 2 days prior, I didn't need a trail shoe. It was just
easy.
Fine.
Yeah.
So watch out for that. If you're out there, try to go maybe in the morning or in the well, probably not the evening. I don't know, maybe the evening. But in the morning when the ground is still a little frozen, if you go later in the day, especially on a sunnier and warmer day, you might find that the trails are pretty slick. I had to really be careful around some of the corners.
Yeah.
So that mud, too, is very sticky, and it was sticking to the bottom of my shoe. So you get wet, slippery mud on your shoe, coming down onto wet, slippery mud on the trail. And that's, you know, it's like somebody had buttered up the trails or something.
Right.
So be careful with that if you're out there midday after some colder evenings.
I think we've had kind of a unique fall in that it's been so warm.
Mm-hmm.
And no real extended periods of freezing.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's really when the trails shut down, when you have the hard freeze and the thaw cycle.
Yeah.
But I don't think we've really seen that quite yet.
We haven't. And I will say this, I was slipping around with the wet mud, but it wasn't very deep.
Right.
So I don't think I would leave a little skid mark kind of on the trail.
Yeah.
And that would be about it. But I wasn't.
Right.
I noticed there was a couple of bikers out there, and I would see their bike path. There was definitely not damaging the trail by any means.
Right.
Just be careful with that right now. Hopefully, I'd almost prefer just some more cold weather just to lock them up for good.
Lock them up,
the next few months.
Right. Okay, next we have Coach's Corner. What do you got for some coach's advice for all our listeners out there, Tony?
I think right now the big thing for being this time of the year is this is the kind of the off season. There's not a lot of races left. And so what do you do now? How do you stay motivated?
Mm-hmm.
What kind of training are you going to try to do? Maybe just abandon the run and you start skiing when the snow flies.
Mm.
Or biking a little bit more often and fat biking in the wintertime. But I think it can be a tough challenge without a race on the docket for a lot of folks for, probably months at this point. Maybe Fickers 5K is really the next kind of big, typically up here, that's the kickoff of the race season.
Yeah.
So you've got a few months. You've got 4, 5, 6 months before an actual race, and you've got maybe 2 or 3 months before training kind of begins in earnest with a real focused training. So what do you do? And to me is try to stay consistent. I talk about being patient, being consistent all the time, and this is the time of the year where you definitely try to do that. Just get a rhythm established. Don't worry too much if your miles drop. That's going to be just fine. But if you stay consistent, I think that's going to help you out a lot when you do begin that more focused training, either at the turn of the year in January, February, or even a little bit later in March into April or something like that, whatever an individual does.
Yeah.
But, stay consistent, and that's to me, that's always the key at this time of the year.
Hmm.
Yeah.
that's interesting about consistency, you know, and it makes sense, I guess, but what are the pros and cons of being consistent towards the low end, mm-hmm. of like maybe not running at all or doing something else versus being consistent with, you know, maybe trying to even push it or get back or...
Yes, exactly. I think that's a great point because a lot of times, too, this is a time where people really increase their mileage. Hmm. You know, this is a big period for building a huge base for the spring, and that's definitely a good approach. You can certainly do that, especially if you had a year prior, you know, January up till November, of some decent mileage. You've got kind of a base for your base building, as it were. That's definitely an approach that you can do. I'm a big fan of that. But yeah, like you say, another approach would be, this would be a time where you back off a little bit too and maybe heal up from the efforts that you put out through the first part of 2021, and just kind of take a little break so that you can rebuild again.
Right.
Both approaches can be successful. You have to know as an individual what works best for you, not only physically, but mentally as well. Sometimes people just need that. I just need to shut it down. And that's where, if you're a multi-sport person with skiing and biking, that's where those other endeavors can come in handy.
Yeah.
So that you can kind of just recharge your mental batteries.
Yeah.
You know, I think a lot of folks are that way. Up here in Duluth, we have such great opportunities for biking and skiing. So taking advantage of that for some people, I think, is a huge key.
Yeah.
Some others are like, I like to do this one thing, and that's what I'm going to do.
Right.
Both approaches can be successful. You have to know as an individual what works for you.
Yeah. I think the mental aspect can't be understated. I feel like it's a kind of a balance or like a battle between feeling like I'm not wasting the fitness that I built up, and also just doing whatever the heck I want to do, you know?
Yeah.
For instance, it's like there's winter races, you know, I could stay training.
Yep.
I'm in great shape. I can bounce back and have pretty good performance, you know, into January for the winter marathon or something. But then also just like the last couple of weeks I've been after work, like, oh, I'll get out and run, I guess. And then I just decide to walk the dogs instead. You know, it's like, this just sounds better.
Yeah.
And who cares, you know?
Yep. Well, there's a real freedom in that, in this off season without having anything. And if you find yourself kind of in that mental spot where it's like, you're just kind of lackadaisical, you're just, the desire to go for a run isn't there.
Yeah.
Well, that's really your emotions telling you, don't run. You really need the break. You have to listen to those. Those are keys to that.
Right.
It's telling you that you're sort somewhat maybe overtrained, or you just mentally, emotionally need something else besides running.
Right.
So in a way, that's exactly what you need is to not run.
Yeah.
Actually. Yeah.
I mean, don't get me wrong. I love running personally. Mm-hmm. You know, I love it. It's so fun.
Yep.
But even training, you know, going into a peak build up. There's plenty of days I don't feel like running
because
I ran the last 5 days, you know, big miles, and day six or whatever.
Yep.
Like, geez.
Yeah.
But you go out anyways.
Yeah.
And you get it done, and it feels better afterwards. And so that's like a difference between obviously peak season and off season.
To me, that's it exactly. I think you said it well. Like when you are in training mode and you've got a race in like a month or two, and you don't want to go on a run on a certain day. Some of those days, you maybe tough it out and you do
tough it out, right.
This time of the year, that's made you maybe be a little more conservative and you maybe back it off because you really don't have anything on the docket right away, you know? So take advantage of that. And
counterproductive, and maybe, to
get you out have there. You have to kind of balance it both ways. And some days you back off and some days you go. And to me, this is the time of the year where it is okay to back off a little bit. You have plenty of time to recover and build up your fitness again. So,
maybe this kind of bleeds into my thoughts on the run. I should reframe this segment just for this week. Thoughts on the walk. But, you know, kind of the on season, off season, and the difference in the line there. And training for Wild Duluth, I had kind of low expectations because I had the bike race the day across Minnesota.
Yep.
And before that race even occurred, I signed up for Wild Duluth knowing that essentially is an 8-week span between that. I think it was a 9-week span, actually. Mm-hmm. So I put together essentially a 7-week training program with a rapid buildup.
Yep.
Because I'd been biking all summer and my miles were low. And, you know, I just kind of felt like my running performance was maybe at the lowest level it had been for years. So whatever, you know, it's still fun. I can power hike the whole race.
Right.
I'll sign up for it and see what I can do. So after the day across Minnesota, I took 1 week off just with no structure and then 7 weeks with a rapid buildup. And how that looked was 30 miles, about 33, 37, and then 40. And then I had one kind of back off week and then 65 and then 85.
Wow, yeah.
And then a 1 week taper.
Yep.
And then the race. And so it was a kind of a high risk program,
mm-hmm.
because, you know, going from maybe 15 miles per week for months and months and months with some biking and paddleboarding and I mean, it's not like I was like out of shape necessarily, but, you know, running is the best for running, obviously.
Right.
And then going to 30, you know, and kind of doing a normal, you know, the 10% rule, 10% increase a week. But then from 35 to 65 to 85, I mean, I don't think any coach would recommend something like that.
Right. Yeah.
And the risk of injury was there. And I think, you know, two more 85 weeks in a row after the one would have been a death sentence.
Right.
But with a taper week to kind of recuperate enough and then the race right there, I didn't really have an injury.
Yeah.
And I smashed my expectations on the race. Really.
Yep.
And even with what I would expect from a more traditional long-term training program. So now I'm thinking, Tony, and maybe you can advise, maybe this is for everyone or maybe not, but like, I'm just going to only do 7-week training programs, right. I think, from here on out, because it worked great.
Right. I'm always fascinated by these discussions and these theories, you know, low mile, high mile, you know, the shorter training period versus a longer block. I lean more towards the longer block, the higher miles.
Mm-hmm.
I think that has the more benefits, long-term. With that, we often kind of describe these shorter approaches, as a get fit quick scheme, and it can be successful, you know, like a crash diet. You can lose weight. Chances are long term you're going to put it back on again. Same thing with training. You can get pretty fit pretty fast with certain approaches, whether it's high intensity interval training or just your 3 weeks of miles and then certain miles and then boom, huge couple of weeks of huge jumps.
Yeah.
That can be done and be successful as you just showed. And I think for you individually, I think that speaks to, number one, you're a good athlete and that helps. Two, you did have a huge base of fitness under you with the biking and that helps too.
Sure.
So you combine those two factors of your athletic ability with your already good aerobic conditioning that you had. That you had those two things on your side. Another thing that you would have on your side, or you did have on your side, would be your experience. You've ran that specific race a lot. You have a ton of running experience, and that helps. Also, relative youth. I mean, how old are you?
32.
So, I mean,
I got gray hairs.
Yeah, yeah. I'm gonna say relative youth. You know, obviously, you're not 25 anymore, and that's a little bit of a difference. But you're still, to me, a lot of times for the distance stuff, I think you can still peak in 35. Sort of years old for a male,
sure.
With some of the longer distance stuff, because you just get that strength and that experience, and that's really beneficial. And then again, coupled with your good athletic ability, that's going to extend, you know, that age range of performance for you. So that's a good thing too. But again, long term, I don't think that's going to be the way to go. So 7 week plan for everything from now on, I wouldn't recommend it, but you can certainly try it. And then one other thing too that I think helped you. And we touched on this, is the emotional side,
yeah.
where you didn't get a chance to really to get burnt out emotionally from running.
Right.
You know, it was like 7 weeks of freshness and you had that fitness before you from the biking, and now you can just put away the biking. You probably got tired of the bike at that point, at some point, right? You got sick of that. And now something new. And that emotionally, mentally, can really be beneficial. And again, I know a lot of people who are that same way. They just need to break it up every once in a while.
Yeah.
That's not necessarily a bad thing at all. Huh. So in that way, that shorter training plan can be successful for a person.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And also it was like 4 or 5 weeks of kind of traditional, you know, training. I'm doing air quotes, traditional, like with a 10% increase.
Yep.
But then a huge bump up in 2 weeks to a 60.
Yeah.
You know, and that 85-mile week, I was doing a lot of race pace efforts. You know, I probably ran at my goal pace of 12 minutes per mile on technical trail for, let's see, I did a 10 hours that week.
Yeah.
You know, at least.
Yep.
And that constituted 50 out of the 80 miles.
Yeah.
So there's that too, I think. You know, training for a half marathon, I wouldn't want to run 10 hours at my goal half pace, but
right. That would have been a recipe for injury for sure.
Yeah.
Or burnout. If you're lucky, it would have only been burnout, but probably would have been injury.
I mean, I think anyone can gut out like a really tough week for 1 week.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely. Especially with a little experience under your belt, especially with good athletic ability, and that base.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's interesting. It was an interesting kind of, and I've kind of toyed around with this training plan style or method, but this was more aggressive than I'd ever done, and it really paid off. So
we've had some brief conversations about this in the past on the podcast about, you know, high mile, low mile, and what works. And honestly, everything does work to some extent. Every approach has, you're going to be able to find some examples of success with different approaches all over the place.
Right.
As a whole, you know, kind of that high mileage thing, I'm a big believer in, and I think it's just been proven out over the past five or six decades with Arthur Lydiard, you know, in the late 50s, early 60s. But you don't have to look very hard to find success in other opposite end of the spectrum approaches.
Yeah,
for sure.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think it's always fascinating to discuss and to learn about.
It is.
Yeah.
Yeah. I'd be curious, you know, maybe we can get some shout outs on the Facebook page or to our email, the DuluthRundown@gmail.com, on maybe a training plan that worked for someone out there where they maybe had low expectations, but it panned out, or kind of non-traditional, if you will, lead up to a race.
Yeah,
you know?
Absolutely.
Because the bottom line, I think, for everyone is you want to perform at the top of your abilities, right? I mean, that was my goal for Wild Duluth when I put together the plan, you know, and this is what I thought I could do given my parameters of, I got 9 weeks, you know?
Yep.
And,
it worked out well. Term, yeah. So. Yeah. And I think you did it well. I think you did it real well. And it's pretty, let me ask, did it feel when you jumped from that kind of that taper week, not the foot taper, but the, that recovery week up to the 60 some mile week?
Yeah.
Were you nervous?
Yeah.
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 How about the 85 mile week? Were you nervous again?
Yeah. Big time.
Yeah.
Now it's 2 weeks out from the race, you know? So like if I get injured now, I'm putting it all down the crapper.
So it's definitely a roll of the dice.
Oh, for sure.
Yeah.
That's how I felt.
Yeah.
But also the difference, I guess the difference between my kind of build up weeks on the front end, where I got up to, you know, about 40 miles, and the big ones, the difference was strictly race pace effort.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah.
So it was essentially, it looked the same Monday through Friday. Mm-hmm. And then instead of a 12 mile, it was like a, you know, 30 mile weekend.
Yeah.
Right. So instead of one 12 mile trail run, I did two back-to-back monster, you know, runs. So that was the difference. And even more so the next weekend, whereas I did a 20 and a 30-mile back-to-back.
Right.
And I think those 2 days were, like, the key days.
And then after you successfully navigated those 2 weeks, where was your confidence level?
Oh, extremely high.
Yeah.
Because after a 20-miler on Saturday and then the 30-miler up in Teta Gooch the next day, and I walked away, and Monday woke up, jumped out of bed, like, yep, let's go.
One of the best feelings in training and performing is that feeling of confidence right before a race, whether it's literally on the start line or right as you begin your taper, you're like, you know, or both, you know, obviously it's going to be pretty much both. I love that feeling of confidence. After a good training block and you made it through and you know you're fit.
Right.
Yeah.
It's exciting.
Yep, for sure.
That's been my thoughts on the walk, just kind of disbelief. Like
thoughts on the walk. Huh. I actually have thoughts on the run
and,
that occurred to me while we were recording this, and it goes back to NMTC.
Oh, yeah.
Actually, I have a shout-out kind of request or a thought for the folks of the NMTC who are on that committee for the series to consider team races.
What do you mean?
I think that would be cool. So... And everybody's, you're allowed to play around with this idea, but maybe a group of 3 to 5 people on a team, you just join up a team, one gender, co-ed, however you want to do it, or both, and you score it like cross-country races.
Like cross-country.
And a team result at the end of the series.
Yeah.
I think they used to actually have them way back in the day. They had some teams. They had some
relays for NMTC.
They had relays. They had some team stuff involved with the relays.
Interesting.
I don't think you could do relays anymore because there's too many people that would take too long.
Right.
But you can still have a team race where, you score it like cross-country.
Right.
And you have to have a minimum of races that each team runs.
Right.
You know, to have a little score. So maybe each team has to run at least 5 of the races in a series or something like that. I think that'd be kind of fun.
That would be interesting.
Yeah.
I'd be curious on the history of that to learn more about how teams have been done in the past.
It just popped into my head a couple of days ago, actually, after the Hawks Ridge run.
Yeah.
I wonder if... I know they could do that, especially, if they're getting 120, 150, 180 people.
Yeah.
You can... easily do a team, 3 to 5 people on a team.
Yeah.
You need at least 3 people at a specific race to score.
Right.
Something like that. Huh. Anyway, something to think about for NMTC folks.
That'd be fun. I've never done a cross-country race, so I think that would be a fun element.
Yeah.
Kind of missed out on that in college or high school or whatever. And that just doesn't really exist out there as a non-organized sport race option.
Yeah, right? Exactly. You just don't see it very much. I know the sidewalk shuffle has kind of a team thing.
Yep.
A corporate team thing, but so that's one I can think of around here that does that. But I know, the NMTC stuff I believe was kind of somewhat modeled after some of the park runs in England that they do with some of the running clubs. And, they have those team aspects because club running is such a big thing over in Europe.
Yeah.
And the park runs that they still do are very NMTC-like. It's a lot of times they're like on a weeknight they're trail runs around parks and things like that.
Local,
they have a team aspect always to those. Huh. So. Yeah, something for the NMTC folks to consider.
Interesting. Yeah, we need to make a formal appeal.
To
the board. We'll start drafting that up for next spring. That's cool. Route of the week. Where have you been running, Tony?
Yeah. So actually, I have we ran this last Sunday with a couple of buddies, and it's a nice little place to go run. Is start at the Leicester Park main parking lot there and head east from there. And now Brighton Beach has since been reopened, so you can run through Brighton Beach, which is really nice. They've got a trail through there, a new trail that you can run on. It's really nice.
Mm-hmm.
And that'll get you to the scenic route, but instead of taking the scenic route up the shore, cross the scenic route and do... we always call it Old Superior Street, but it is East Superior Street, and run on that road. It's a lot quieter road than the scenic route. Kind of a rolling hill, straight as an arrow. It's also nice, too, because you've got trees on both sides. So if you get a windy day coming off the water, you're blocked from that a little bit. There's not a lot of shoulder there, but the traffic is really low.
Right.
And quite frankly, the locals that are driving along that road, they're really nice. They're used to people running out there, so they move over. And I just really enjoy that route. Like I say, it is kind of straight, so it'd be an out and back. So if that's not your thing, maybe it'd be a little dull. But I don't mind that at all, personally, the out and back.
Yeah.
And you can get from Brighton, I think you can get about 5.5 miles one way before you have to turn around. I think it's about 6 miles from the Leicester parking lot before you have to turn around. It's to kind of dead ends.
Yeah.
But it's a nice little road. And like you say, it's pretty rolly, but mostly flat.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that you mentioned out and back, because I've actually used Old Superior Street or East Superior Street, you know, north of Brighton Beach for loops.
Oh, sure. You can do it that way, too.
You can go out to, like, what I've done is you go out to Ryan Road at McQuaid Harbor.
Yep.
And then you can go up Ryan Road, I guess, northwards.
Yep.
And then turn back on East Superior Street. And, you know, that's how you avoid the out and back on the scenic or on East Superior Street, is you can make that nice little loop.
Yeah, exactly. So, and other people, too, a lot of times they will go one direction on East Superior Street, and then they'll turn on McQuaid and come, like, say, they'll go out on East Superior, turn on, take a right on McQuaid, and come back on the scenic route.
Yeah.
You can certainly do that, too. Like,
yeah.
Make it a loop that way.
Little looper. Yeah. Cool. Well, I didn't know Brighton Beach was complete. I know that was closed down for several months due to storm damage, so I'm really curious to go run down there and check out the new...
It's really nice. It's interesting, too, because you cannot drive through now.
Right.
You can only drive in on one end, and then you'd have to turn around and go back, or you can drive in on the other end and turn around and go back, but in the middle, there's no road.
Huh.
So I don't know if that's the plan or if they're going to put a road through. I'm not really sure, because
like, parking down there, or...
There's not. There's room to turn around if you want, but there's not a specific lot that's been built or anything like that on either side. And right now the trail, the new bike trail or paved trail that runs through there, it literally goes across where the road used to be.
Okay.
So to me, it seems like they're not going to have any driving all the way through, which would be really nice for pedestrian traffic and bike traffic to not have the cars. But I don't know. We'll see. I really don't know what the plan is.
Huh.
Yeah.
I mean, that was like probably the worst road to drive through in Duluth anyways.
Right.
Like, the road was in really bad shape, and then it's like narrow enough where two cars could barely cross each other, and there's always pedestrians
and
there.
So, walking.
Like, good riddance to the through route.
That's my thought, too. Just selfishly, like, it'd be great if they, because, like, when they close Seven Bridges, they block both ends off in the wintertime, you know?
Similar to that.
You can run on it. Oh, it's so nice.
Yeah.
Just to have that road to yourself. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Cool. Well, I'm going to have to check out Brighton Beach myself.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Next, we have a gear review, and this is kind of a follow-up to episode 42 that we did. Well, Tony, you and I were both maybe stressfully... anxiously, you know, planning our race shoes for
overthinking our shoes like some people often do.
Yeah, and so now we can follow up on how our race shoes performed. So remind me, what was the shoe that you used and how did it work?
Yeah, so I did the Whistle Stop Marathon, and I ran in the Hoka Mach 4. Is either going to be that or the Adidas Audio 6, I think, the new Adios. And I love the foam more in the Adios. It's definitely a zippier, quicker shoe. But I went with the Mach 4 because it's got a little wider base. The weight was similar. Everything was kind of a wash that way. A little more stack height than the Mach 4, but not much.
Mm-hmm.
But I wanted that wider base, knowing that the Whistle Stop Trail was, you know, a trail, essentially, and slightly uneven, and I just didn't want my foot to be kind of moving back and forth for 26 miles.
Right.
I think I made the right decision. The shoe felt great on that surface. I had no problems really with the instability of the trail at all.
Yeah.
I think that wide base actually did what I was hoping it would do and just kind of kept my foot locked down a little bit better. So I'm happy with it. It performed just fine.
Yeah. Great.
Yeah. And how about you?
I had the Ultra Lone Peak. And then also I kind of anxiety purchased a past model of the Brooks Cascadia, which is my old standby. Mm-hmm. I've done many trail ultras in that shoe. I kind of had this big toe issue. I think it's like a bunion going on.
Okay.
It's not serious, but it was a little tender on the outside, or the inside rather. What do you call that? The inside?
The medial.
Medial.
Yeah.
The medial side of like the side of my big toe, the ball of your foot kind of. And so the Ultra, obviously they're known for their massive toe boxes.
Yeah.
That one kind of felt better just in running. I did some of my longer runs in it and I was concerned about the zero drop, but it just rolled with it. Nice. My crew, M, she had my Cascadias in tow, so that was kind of my backup. But I figured I would just run with them as late, long as I could, and I made it about 40 miles, and then maybe at, you know, 35 miles, when I was making right-hand turns, I noticed the pain on the medial. What's the opposite of medial?
Lateral.
Lateral. Yeah. The outside of my right foot. Mm-hmm. So the opposite side that was initially bugging me. I don't know why. I can't explain it, but I think when I was, like, landing on the outside, the lateral side of my right foot, like, making a right turn, it was kind of just irking me a little bit. And, you know, in retrospect and, like, underfoot feel, the Ultra is less rigid. It's pretty flexible, you know, torsionally not very rigid. You know, it's like the soft, comfortable, you know, floaty type trail shoes, which is why I liked it.
Right.
But also I didn't find it to be super rigid. And so I think that's, you know, having a little more wiggle room for my ankles and feet, you know, took a toll after 35, 40 miles. And ultimately I switched to the Cascadia either at 40 miles, and now I'm blanking. It might have been either at Ely's Peak on the way back or at Spirit, which is about mile 45. So somewhere in there I switched, and it was an amazing feeling. And I ran the rest of the race feeling confident and a little less in pain. Mm-hmm. And then the next day for the 10K, I ran in the Cascadias for sure, just because everything was in bad shape. So it was a good 1-2 punch, I think, ultimately. Who knows if I would have been able to run, you know, felt good in the Cascadias the whole time, but it worked, so I'm happy with it. Now nice. I have two pairs of nice trail shoes that I like for the whole next season, really.
Yep, through the winter. And
yeah,
that's,
and
awesome.
They're different enough where I like having that variability.
Well, that brings up a question that I have, speaking of the difference of those. When you're doing a longer race and you switch shoes, and I've done this where in the Superior 100 miler where I switch shoes, do you have the two shoes be kind of similar, or even exactly similar, but you know, the same model but two different pair, or do you want a big difference so that your body kind of changes, that feel is a little different? Do you want those shoes to be different?
Yeah.
What do you think is the better way to go?
Ooh.
I know from experience when I did switch shoes, both shoes were kind of the same. There wasn't a big difference between the two.
Yeah.
And so I wondered, like, oh, I wonder if it would have felt better if the shoes would have been completely different. Like yours
were
pretty different.
Pretty different.
Yeah.
Zero drop or 8 mil drop, kind of beefy versus a little more floaty, cushiony. Yeah, I see what you're saying. I think in my opinion, this is just me and maybe other, you know, long ultra trail runners can relate.
Right.
But when you're selecting a race shoe for a long race like that, for me, there's generally a concern, right?
Yes.
So the concern with the ultras, for instance, it's a zero drop shoe. Therefore, I want to find another shoe that can kind of mitigate that concern. Brooks Cascadia, 8 mil drop. Or, you know, for instance, the ultra is like, I haven't really done a long race in a zero drop shoe like this, or this particular shoe model, or something, where I have in the Cascadia. So I have the confidence that the Cascadia, you know, historical precedence, it should work fine.
Yeah.
So for me, it's more trying to mitigate my existing concerns with the shoe that I think, you know, will do me best, and not necessarily looking for same versus different. It's to mitigate that concern.
So the difference would be there's a tried and true, and there's a slightly unknown. And so maybe you don't want two shoes that are more slightly unknown.
Right.
At least have one that's a tried and true.
Right. And for instance, at Superior 100 as well, you know, that's even longer, right? So 100-mile race, I mean, I think most runners will have a secondary pair backup. Mm-hmm. I recall in that race in 2017, I had one pair of shoes, I believe is the Brooks Cascadia, you know, for instance, that were just rock solid. I love this shoe. Great. It's going to be lovely. But I also brought a pair that was much bigger, much more room. Mm-hmm. And so that was my concern, is will my feet like swell more than expected? So bring this huge pair of shoes that has so much room and they feel like clown shoes when I run in them. And I, so that was my concern, you know, is the Cascadias, they feel good now, but 60, 70, 80 miles in, they might start to feel tight.
Right.
So I brought the clown shoes, essentially.
And did they work?
Yeah, sure. I don't know. it was a good switch up. I think regardless of the plan, right, for switching out shoes or bringing shoes or whatever, switching them out probably feels better. Yeah. For me, they've always felt better to switch out shoes.
Yeah. Yep. I agree. I think so. In a longer run, there's just something, at least for a little while. I mean, 100 miles, let's say you switch out, like for me, when I switched out shoes, I think it was about around mile 70.
Yeah.
When I switched out shoes on Superior 100. So that new shoe, the second shoe, felt good for probably like 5 miles. And then after that, everything just hurts again anyway, or you forget. But at least there's that break. At least there's, for me, there was that respite of, oh, my feet are, it's just that different feel was nice.
Yeah. Sometimes that positive mental boost can go a long way.
Totally. And who knows? Maybe if I had to suffer, if I didn't have to suffer through those 5 miles with, you know, that nice feeling, maybe I would have dropped out at 95. Who knows?
No, come on.
No, I do think like switching up shoes on those longer runs is a nice thing though too. And even just in training in general, we've talked about this, like having a couple of different kinds of training shoes. I think it feels good to the body just to change it up. I have both the Hoka Bondi that I run in a lot and the Brooks Glycerin GTS, used to be the Transcend.
Yeah.
And now it's the Glycerin GTS. And there's a different feel to those, and I like switching that up. Just every day feels a little bit different.
Yeah. I literally have 8 pairs of running shoes that I'll use through at any given time.
Yep.
One goes and I get a new one.
Yep.
I have like $1,000 worth of running shoes at any given point in time. But it's not like I spend $1,000 every time I'm going to the rinks, you know.
It's a cheap sport, remember?
You're right. Hey, yeah. I think that's a little bit obscure for some people to grasp, even experienced runners. But
well, I was thinking about this actually while you were talking. Like back in the day before, I mean, there's so many options now for running shoes that we can, more runners do this where they have multiple shoes. But back years ago, that didn't occur. You just kind of had one and you did everything in it.
Right.
For the most, you had a racing flat maybe, and then your training shoe. And that was really about it.
Yeah.
And so it certainly can be done. And I know plenty of other runners to this day that they just have their one shoe and that's what they do.
Yeah.
And it's just fine to do it that way. It isn't, we're talking about this almost as it's a necessity, and it certainly isn't. It's more of a luxury.
Yeah.
It's certainly a nice luxury. And if you're a shoe geek, it's a fun luxury.
For sure.
Because, I mean, I look at, you know, the Saucony.com and Adidas.com and Brooks.com all the time just to see what's new and what updates are occurring now that I'm not really in the shoe business anymore.
Yeah.
I have to kind of keep up with it that way.
Right.
But, just as a shoe geek, that's a lot of fun.
It is.
Yeah. But then you get tempted. You're like, ooh, that new shoe looks kind of nice, or that update looks good or whatever. So then you're constantly tempted to get something new.
Yeah. But, like, over the course of a year, it's not like you or me being liking a lot of shoes, different shoes. It's not like we spend any more money than someone who's just getting the same new shoe every month or 2 months or 3 months. Right.
I think that's totally true. The money that you spend really is just a more of a result of how many miles a week do you run.
Yeah.
That's really what it is.
So, I mean, I got 10 pairs of shoes. I put 10% of my miles on each pair, right? Essentially.
Exactly. Yeah, more or less, that's pretty much how it works. Yeah. They'll, calendar-wise, each shoe will last you longer. Mileage is going to be the same, of course, but do you hit 500 miles in 2 months, or do you hit 500 miles in 5 months, or 6 months, or whatever?
Yeah. But now the issue, especially with Wild Duluth and, you know, having two shoes, and is now I have, like, 5 pairs of trail shoes. It's going to take me years to burn through those. Oh, well.
It's a fun problem to have.
It's not too bad. I think we got a little bit off track with the gear review, but that's okay. I think all we have left, I don't know, on my list here is shout outs.
I think that's about it. Quick shout out to Jacob Wortman for an incredible performance with winning Whistle Stop and then the very next day turning around and winning the Bull Run.
Yeah.
NMTC race, which is a heck of a feat. I was sore after Whistle Stop. I literally didn't run a step for 8 days. So to go and race an extremely difficult NMTC race the day after Whistle Stop is.
Well, keep this in mind too. That was an extremely difficult race, Bull Run,
yep.
which is in Jay Cook, mm-hmm. intense hills.
Yep.
But also that's the first Sunday race.
Right.
So Jacob raced and got third, just 4 right. days earlier at the Woodland 5K. At the Wednesday race. And so, I mean, just like for me, I found that to be a tough turnaround.
Right.
The Wednesday and then the Sunday.
And the Sunday.
Okay.
And
now
throw a marathon in there.
Right. Now Jacob does the 5K at Woodland on Wednesday. Saturday marathon wins it 2:41 and comes around. And he looked fresh. I was at the Bull Run. He looked fresh. And I happened to see the results that morning.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, Jacob Wortman? Like, no way. Cool. Like, I wonder if he's going to show up today, you know, because there's always a difference in who shows up on the Wednesday to the Sunday. Some
yeah.
new people show up. Some are the same, you know, trying to get all the series. And then some Wednesdays just drop off, you know, with people's schedules or whatever. So
yeah,
I've noticed, you know, doing NMTC through the years, it's always a little bit different cast.
Right.
That first Sunday race. But there he was.
Yeah.
Jacob, I almost like rubbed my eyes like, why are you here? You
know? Yeah.
But and he went out like just whew,
yeah
didn't can see him learned that he won that race and then actually had the chance to cool down with him as well.
Nice.
Why would you cool down after that? I have no idea. Like, you're trying to torture yourself. We just we're cooling down and we hit like one hill. He's like, oh, I'm feeling it now. Like, now you're feeling it.
And Whistle Stop was a hot and humid day. I mean, the humidity
yeah.
was like 99%.
Yeah.
That had to take more. I mean,
yeah.
That's a fit guy right there. That's
impressive.
Peak fitness right there. So, yeah, big shout out to Jacob for. And we've talked about this a little bit with. Maybe we mentioned it with Jacob, but I know we've mentioned it with Chris Rubish. That guy just has an incredible range of
right.
fast 5Ks on the road if he wants to fast 100 milers. And Jacob, too, has that same range.
Same range.
It's really impressive.
Yeah.
Not everybody can do that.
Right,
so,
right. Yeah. And a good skier as well. So
we need to get Jacob on the podcast sometime.
Jacob, if you're listening,
yeah.
we want you.
Yeah, we'll talk to you.
We'll talk to you. Nice work. What else?
I think that's about it.
Great. Well,
yeah.
we like to hear from our listeners, so, you know, drop us a line on the Facebook page. Oh, I do have one last shout-out, I guess, too, and this is... for Tyler Barron's wife, who
mm-hmm.
I don't know her name, but he actually wanted to pass along a shout out to her. And I kind of forgot the story. This was like weeks ago already, but he kind of just had a cool idea of like, you know, our listeners submitting shout outs that we can shout out on their behalf.
Good
so
idea. I like it.
Yeah, he wanted to shout out his wife, who I kind of forget the story. I should have written it down a little bit more, but. Just had a great race, you know, this fall season, and he was really proud of her, and she was pretty proud of it. So I guess the point of even saying this is that, Tyler, thanks for bringing that up, and it would be cool to get more shout outs on behalf of our listeners.
Yeah.
You know, and we can kind of we like to hear stories that we can't capture, right? Like you and I, it's hard for us to
we can't hear
everything
all the time. Yeah.
And so it's really fun to hear, you know, shout outs or just like cool running stories from the Duluth community. And it kind of makes the podcast a little more spicy.
Yeah, I just saw them in Hartley earlier this week running, and good to see both of them. I mean Tyler's always pretty fit, it seems like.
Yeah.
So yeah. Thanks, Tyler. That's a great idea.
That's all I got. Well, we'll see you in December.
Yep.
The next podcast.
Talk with you then. Thanks, everybody. Oh, and a big shout out to, big thanks to, you know, our sponsor, Austin Jaro, and to everybody who listens and comments to us either out in public or Facebook or Gmail. Thanks for letting us know that you listen. We appreciate it. I actually, this is an interesting thing, Mike. I got an email from a lady in the cities about doing some coaching.
Mm-hmm.
She lives in the Twin Cities, and she's like, oh, I just discovered your podcast. I love it. So we've got a listener in the cities, too, which is cool.
Cool.
Yeah.